This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, hello. Okay, great.
From the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
This is Spark.
This is Spark.
Technology.
Trends.
And fresh.
Fresh ideas.
Fresh ideas.
This
is on the air.
This is
online.
This is Spark.
CBC.ca/Spark.
Watch an interactive movie, savor an omelet, clean the crud off your keyboard, all in 27 minutes. Spark starts with this.
In grade 10, I tried to help a friend through the final exam of our music theory class.
When I was in junior high, we had science class, grade 6 Canadian politics test. I would share a calculator with a friend.
The exam was multiple choice.
And so one of us would figure out the answer for something and put it on the calculator and slide it over to the other one.
I thought it would be clever.
And we'd both get all the right answers.
I could not remember if Liz was one or two.
And I didn't notice. I doubt that I was very much help at all.
I admit it, I'm Nora Young, and I cheated in school once. I was in grade 7, so what, 12, 13 years old? Home ec class, I hated sewing, hated it, and I was bad at it. I was always breaking the needle because I'd forget to take the pins out. I didn't get my mother's sewing jeans, I guess. So for one assignment, I took a half-finished blouse that my mother had been making, and I pretended it was my work. My mom never knew. Until now. Sorry, Mom. One thing's for sure, cheating may not be new, but the way kids are cheating is.
Well, MP3 players are so small, they could be anywhere on their body and we'd have no clue about it. But in terms of earphones, they actually put them through the back of their clothing. So we don't see the little earphones. They've got them in their ears and we have no clue that they're there. So they can record their class notes, they can record their textbooks, and they just loop that and keep playing it during the exam until they get to the aspects that they need, because they don't want to be too fidgety in their pockets.
That's a dead giveaway.
Yeah. Dead giveaway.
Donna Bell's the academic integrity officer at Ryerson University in Toronto, which means she's the person you have to go see if you're on the hook for cheating. I didn't tell her about the whole sewing class thing. She sees all kinds of high-tech cheating these days. Call it plagiarism 2.0.
You know, a few years ago they were text messaging. So you would text message your friends the question and somebody would respond the answer back to you. You know, they've gotten more creative in that they use the camera facet now, the ability to use the camera. They take a picture of the exam or a picture of the question and they send it via email to a friend and that friend responds back with the answer.
Cuts down on the fidgeting. You just take one picture and there you go.
One picture and wait, if they get all the questions, it's the whole page.
Yeah. And how often do students get caught?
We were part of a research that was conducted 4 years ago, and it was 10 universities, and it was 65,000 university students. The average was 70% of the students admit it.
What?
70%. And I'm actually giving you the average of the 10 universities.
Yeah.
And 25% admitted to cheating in a final examination setting where there's invigilators going up and down, where your bags are left at the front of the room.
You know, we posted the topic of this interview at our blog, and
okay.
We asked for people to send us some of their own cheating stories. And we got a blog comment from Rob, who's actually marked university essays. And he says, if you're going to copy something from the internet and try to pass it off as your own, don't copy it from Wikipedia. At least try to find some obscure website to steal from.
Yes.
Do people actually do that? Like, how bad can the cheating be?
Do you know, I think one of the key things to look at is possible naivety levels of students when they come into university. And I think what we have to appreciate is that all students come from different places. There are some towns where we have students where they don't even know how to cite. There are certain cultures that it is an honor to use somebody else's word in your work. So we deal with a lot of imbalances of students when they first initially come into the university. So that naivety gets sorted out in the first year.
It's kind of a, I guess, a cut and paste culture in a way.
That's what we call it, yeah. Cut and paste. We recommend they don't cut and paste. Cut and paste.
Cut and paste culture. That's what we're living in.
Hmm. Interesting. When you hear stats from Donna, like 70% of students admit to cheating, it sounds like it's hell in a handbasket time for the generation in school now. But maybe it's not that simple. These days, the line between cheating and collaborating can be kind of fuzzy. Can you tell me who you are?
I'm Mark Fetterman.
Today's technology makes it easier than ever to collaborate, from working together on a wiki to putting someone else's YouTube video on your blog. And that's starting to change what we think of as our own work. Now, no one's saying plagiarism isn't a bad thing, but here's a thought experiment. What if, in the future,
the very idea of one person's work and one person's point of view comes to seem obsolete.
I'm a PhD researcher at the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education at the University of Toronto. And what I look at is the effects of our society of our massively interconnected world.
So do you think the average teenager understands what plagiarism is?
I think not, because they're confronted in their real world with remix culture. They see weblogs, wikis, Facebooks, YouTube, and so on that draw from a wide variety of sources. And they even see it in, you know, in music, in cinema, in theater, in performance art. The whole idea of drawing from someone without explicit citing is rife throughout the world. And in the vast majority of cases, it's not a problem. It's only when we look at how do we assign a credential to this individual that it becomes a problem. And so perhaps I would reframe the question as what's wrong with our credentialing system as opposed to what's wrong with our teenagers.
Mm-hmm. So how should universities respond?
I think, first of all, I think we need to do a much, much better job of training students how to collaborate, because in the end, the product really is irrelevant. It's what stays with them in terms of the thinking, the analysis, the ability to find different sources, the ability to synthesize. That's, I think, the core of education.
If you look down the road to when the generation who are now, say, 10, grow up and get out into the work world, how is their world going to look different in terms of collaboration from the way you and I are working now?
We're going to see, I think, a rethinking, a reconception of what it means to be in an organization, what it means to be in an enterprise. We're seeing it in effect today where, you know, teams of people come together for short periods of time, work together, and then disband.
When I was in school, I took it for granted that creating new work was something I did solo, and if you didn't do that, you were a big old cheater. People like Mark Fetterman argue that the whole culture of learning and creating is changing. Just like Gutenberg revolutionized learning with the printed word and the culture of the book, the network world that stretches out into the future is now making learning collaborative. What do you think? If collaboration is what's valued, should we be testing for individual point of view at all anymore? Visit our website to continue the conversation with the Spark community. I'll be there too. We're at cbc.ca/spark. I put our interview with Donna up on the blog before we made this show, and here's a little of what we got in reply.
As a teacher, I'm not surprised by this interview. Many of my students download music or movies on a daily basis without paying for it, and I feel in many ways this is also like cheating. It gives the creators no credit for their work. So when it comes to an assignment or a test, if there is some way they can get a good grade or move ahead in life without citing it, they definitely don't think twice about doing it. So when I hear students are plagiarizing, I'm not shocked, because stealing a quote is actually easier than finding the new 50 Cent album online to download.
Spark!
cbc.ca/spark.
Tech trends and fresh ideas.
Thanks, Dave. If you go to cbc.ca/spark right now, check out the link to Omelette. We'll be talking about Omelette in about 15 minutes. Omelette. I'm starving. When we spend so much time at our computers being all collaborative, well, sometimes you can't help but drop the odd bit of egg salad sandwich or maybe a cookie crumb onto your computer. This spring, I changed desks at CBC. I took over another host computer. I won't say who. The keyboard was gross. There was food stuck between the keys and on the computer tray. Ugh. Not that my keyboard is much better.
Hi, Nora.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for doing this.
Awesome. My pleasure. My pleasure.
Okay. Are you ready to rock?
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally.
It's Techie DIY.
My name is Scott Michella, and one of the dumber things I've done in recent history is put my keyboard in the dishwasher.
Your computer keyboard in the dishwasher.
Yeah. I was drinking a beer at my computer, which is something I do pretty often, and
right.
I've had problems with sticky keys in the past where you just get a little drop of anything in there, you get a sticky
yeah.
key, and I ran out into the living room where my roommates, who are also very big geeks, one of them recommended dude, just put in the dishwasher. And I was like,
didn't you think that's not a good idea?
Because he saw me bring it to the sink and tip it and outpoured a bunch of beer. And I'm like, no, I'll just run it under the water. He's like, dude, put it in the dishwasher. It'll be fine. I'm like, it's either throw it away or hope for the best or stick it in the dishwasher. So unsupervised, by the way. So I put it in there. I turned it upside down, and I put some dishwasher powder in the reservoir,
right.
And I closed it, and I put it on normal, and I'm letting it run. And my friend Ron, who told me to do this, comes up and says, "You didn't put it on pots and pans, did you?" Because that's like all the hot setting. And I said, "No. I put it on normal." He's like, "Okay." And he went back to watching TV. I went back to looking at my computer, wondering how I'm going to use this thing without a keyboard.
Right.
And then it went through the whole cycle, and as I'm pulling it out, he looks at me and he says, "You didn't use the heated dry
thing." Oh.
And I said, yes, I did. Yeah, I was like, "What?" He's like, bad. I was like, oh, no, I probably just ruined it right there. So I took it out. It was soaking wet still. Turned upside down, and he said, "Didn't you pop off the keys before you put it in?" I didn't. I didn't get the keys off until after I took it out of the dishwasher.
Uh-huh.
And the next mistake I made was not taking a picture before I popped the keys off.
Oh.
Putting the keys back in the right place after they've all been popped off is horrifying.
Now, one of the things, I have a keyboard right here, and one of the things I notice is that it's got this this USB cable attached to it.
Yeah, I mean, I probably had a few too many beers as well. And yes, I put the whole thing in the dishwasher.
And part of the thing about this whole deal about putting something in the dishwasher is that we don't even really know, like, I don't even know where the water comes from in the dishwasher. I don't even know how a dishwasher works.
Yeah, it's the dishwasher, I swear, is one of the most cryptic devices in the entire house. Like, even the TV, I know how it works better than what goes on in the dishwasher. And the worst thing is, you can't, once you close the door, there's no window in there. You can't really even see what's going on in there. It's like this magic device, you know?
So in the end, were you satisfied with the results? How did it look when all of this process was over in the 5 days and everything?
It looked absolutely great. It looked like a brand new keyboard. And honestly, if I had to do it over again, I would do nearly the exact same thing, except I would, you know, obviously take a picture of the keyboard before I pop it in the,
right.
You know, pop the keys
note to
off.
File.
And, you know, a couple things that, you know, in my haste I neglected to do. But it's a completely safe thing now.
Well, Scott, it's not that I don't trust your experience, because I do. But I think that I really need a second opinion. And I'm wondering, Rodney, do you think you could come in?
I'm sorry.
Scott, Rodney is our IT specialist here on the third floor of the CBC.
Okay.
Rodney,
yes.
What would you do if I put my CBC keyboard in the dishwasher?
Well, I would be very upset with you. Please don't do that.
Okay.
Okay?
Rodney looks very serious. I think I better take him at his word. Thanks,
okay.
Rodney.
Thank you.
Sounds like Rodney's an expert in this.
Only with a cheap keyboard, I think, is the takeaway here.
That's right. Seriously. Only with a keyboard that you're willing to lose. Not a family heirloom.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Okay. Awesome.
Now, Rodney's the IT expert, and he says not to do it. But come on. We got to try, don't we? I've got this ratty old keyboard, and I'm going to give it a wash. Move these glasses around. Okay. Let's close this up and let's see what happens.
Hey, you're natural.
So when you put the disc into your DVD, you take your remote control in hand, and then when you want to interact with it, you press the button Enter. And when you press Enter, you essentially switch scenes.
I was working the night shift at the time, and
Anna Serrano is showing me how to operate Late Fragment. It's a Canadian movie being shown at the Toronto International Film Festival next week. Operate a movie, you say? Yeah. Late Fragment has these three interlocking stories made by three different filmmakers. And it's kind of like Choose Your Own Adventure, except you can change the story anytime just by clicking. Now, video artists have been doing this kind of interactive stuff for a while, but Late Fragment is aiming for mainstream appeal. As entertainment moves from the living room to the point-and-click culture of the web or the cell phone, is this kind of collaboration the future of movie making?
I guess, you know, imagine in 1950, we all gathered around the television as though it were our fireplace, and we just sat and watched it. Fast forward 2007, where essentially we sit around our television and we never actually fully watch something. We just flip around our remotes. Interactive film is similar to that experience, except as you're flipping around the remote, you come to realize that every single channel is actually telling a part of the same story that you are experiencing. So all of a sudden, you realize that the 500-channel universe is actually the 500-channel universe of your life. People now have their own blogs, they participate in wikis, they definitely do user-generated content, and a heck of a lot of them play games. And the question we're trying to answer is, if we're using the film as our medium, how do you participate with it? What does that look like? How do you merge interaction with immersion? And so that's sort of the first challenge that we're trying to grapple with.
What makes you think that audiences are ready for this or craving this?
I think participation is becoming part and parcel of our entertainment experience. So I do think that people are looking for something a little bit different in what they consume as entertainment. As we move into the post-postmodern age, our idea of identity is now much more fragmented. We are hybrid people. We have multiple points of view that we're trying to sort of hold in one all the time. And we may now have a medium that actually allows us to investigate and be able to play around with that and understand it in a way that we never could with the type of linear medium that we've had in the past. Linear mediums have hybrid people around, play around with linear medium, play around with hybrid people.
Do you think that's somebody who just enjoys the experience of going to a movie or watching a DVD and putting their feet up on the table is going to be captivated by that experience of interacting?
I think there's going to be a lot of passive viewers who will find some form of guilty pleasure in interacting with this DVD if they were left alone in a dark room with their remote in hand. But they will never, ever say it out loud. Never say it out loud.
So if you imagine going down the road, say, 5 years or so, where do you think we'll be in terms of this type of interactive material?
Well, I certainly hope that this is not the only model. I mean, the whole point of doing this large scale project is to say, hey, guys, look, we're experimenting with this. We want everyone to experiment with this and come up with something even better.
It's a fascinating project, Anna. Thanks a lot. And just one other thing. Could I have a hug?
Yes.
If you have a long-distance love, you want to know about something called the hug shirt. It really exists. Here's how it works. Say you and I are in love and we live in two different cities. We each put on our hug shirt and we each squeeze ourselves and the other one can feel the other's hug. We'll tell you more about the hug shirt on next week's show as one of the ways that people are using technology to deal with long-distance relationships. So send us your stories of long-distance love and technology, like this one that was sent to us from the Spark blog. Liz?
Hi, Nora. So this is a posting that came in from Sarah, and she says, my boyfriend is in the United States Air Force, and we don't get to see each other that often. Almost every day, we take pictures of ourselves or places we go or interesting things we see with our camera phones, and then we send them to one another. And sometimes I make a list of our favorite songs, and I put them on a flash drive to send him in the snail mail. Isn't that a good idea?
That's a great idea. I love getting packages.
I love getting flash drives. So she goes on to say, without technology, we wouldn't be able to communicate as easily. There would be no hearing his voice on the other side of the line or seeing his smiling face in the picture message. I can't even imagine what it would be like to try to stay strong through the long distance without the use of technology. Love.
That is so sweet. Thanks, Sarah. And thanks, Liz.
No problem.
Hi, do you have any medium eggs?
No, either extra large or jumbo.
Okay, I'll take a dozen extra large, please.
I get my eggs from Harlan Clark and his wife. They've been selling eggs from their farm at my local market for 60 years. And they're delicious, too.
What's that?
Whose idea was this? For
it's
you to come
me.
On?
I'm doing it for CBC Radio.
Somebody's put you up to it.
No, no, no.
But what if you want eggs that are really local, like from your own backyard? Omelette is a British company that makes these brightly colored, bubble-shaped housing units for chickens. They're called egg-loos. Seriously, the thing looks like an iMac for chickens. So Omelette lets people raise chickens in their own backyards. Now, you've probably noticed the cult of industrial design, that hunger for everyday objects that are stylish as well as functional. And this trend is really, really obvious in green design. Move over, macrame, eco-chic is here. But even still, Omelette surprised me. It's now trendy to raise your own chickens?
Would you recommend that?
No, of course.
It's foolish? Yes. Why?
Well, eggs are cheap. Too many costs for small producers. It's a killer.
Well, why do people want to raise their own eggs? This week in the Cool Bubble, Thomas Kreese, Californian urban chicken farmer, his chickens, Sophia and Zuzu, and Omelette. So, Thomas, can you hold up the phone to the chickens for just a second so we can hear what they sound like?
You betcha. I'm hoping they don't get stage fright when they see it. Here you go.
So what do you do to quiet the chickens down when they're making a racket?
They absolutely adore grapes. And for me, the first time that I gave them grapes, I thought I'd done the wrong thing because they don't really chew them. They just swallow them whole. And so you can imagine this skinny chicken's neck with this huge grape in the middle of it. And I thought, I'm going to kill my chickens with a grape.
Oh, no.
They just kind of look a little bloated for a moment as it works its way down.
So right.
Now I give them all the grapes they can stand.
Love it. And are you in a city, or is it as more of a suburban kind of context?
I'm in the city, so I can see City Hall, and I can see the big theater complex.
And you're in your backyard with Omelette and the chickens?
I am in my backyard with the Omelette and two chickens inside, yes.
So tell me a bit about what Omelette looks like in your backyard.
I chose a bright orange Omelette because I wanted to stand out against the rest of the plants in our backyard. But we have it tucked in the back left corner of our backyard, and we have a couple chickens that pace back and forth and back and forth all day long inside it.
Are the chickens friendly?
Yeah, I would say that they are. But the thing I was most concerned about is that we have a Great Dane. And I didn't know how he'd do with him, but it seems as though they've had a couple quick pecks to the nose, and he gives them their space.
The Great Dane has learned the hierarchy between the chickens and the dog.
He has, and boy, it's sad to see him fall down the rungs like that.
What's the reaction been from your friends and neighbors?
Some disbelief. And when I kind of get into the whole, well, we got him because if you ever had a farm fresh egg, you know what the golden prize is of having chickens in the backyard. And also I'm doing it because I wanted to teach my girls where the food comes from, that it doesn't come from these styrofoam and cardboard factories, but it actually comes from animals.
You know, more and more, Thomas, consumers want to know where their food comes from and what effect it had on the people who grew it and that kind of thing. It seems that the whole buy local trend is now sort of morphing into live local. What's your take on why people are getting into things like urban gardening and urban farming?
I know that I am getting into it because I'm very intrigued by a better understanding as to where my own food is coming from and how my own taking care of the plants in my backyard are what lead to me having the food that I can eat from them. And I won't say that there's a suspicion in the commercial food processing chain, but I've seen enough of these scares of thousands of people can be affected by one small problem that I'm more interested in seeing how can I better control where my food is coming from.
I mean, what occurs to me, Thomas, is that on the one hand, this is a very sort of do-it-yourself project, a little bit back to the land in one sense. But on the other hand, you know, you're blogging about it, and I see that there's a very active forum at the Omelette site. Do you think there's a community sense of this, a community building up around doing this kind of thing?
Oh, most definitely. One of the things that I enjoyed about becoming an Omelette owner was that I got access to this forum, and I could find out about other folks who went, like me, from a position of chickens in the backyard, what, to maybe I can do it, and then all of a sudden, before you know, you got two chickens in your backyard clucking at you whenever you walk by.
Mm-hmm. How do the eggs taste?
Unfortunately, we don't have eggs yet.
Oh.
I got the girls when they were little chicks back at the end of April, and actually they are 18 weeks old now, and the first time that chickens lay eggs is between 18 and 22 weeks, so we are in the golden zone.
You don't want to put any pressure on the chickens, I guess.
Exactly. It's a relaxed thing here.
Thank you very much for telling us about it, and can we check back in with you when you actually... when they lay an egg?
Oh, it will be my pleasure. I will definitely let you know, and I'll post it on my blog.
Okay, I would love that. Thanks so much, Thomas.
You betcha. Thank you, Nora.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
By the way, if you're thinking of raising your own chickens, some cities allow it and some don't, so check your local bylaws first.
One trend always seems to breed its opposite. In our outsourced, networked world, local and do-it-yourself culture are emerging as powerful trends. Maybe you've noticed the alternative sex appeal of goods made locally, for instance. And trend watchers talk about something called skills status, which is the idea that in our age of consumption, an ability to actually, you know, do stuff on your own is the new cool thing. But all this isn't against the collaboration trend we've been talking about in art or in the way students are learning more and more collaboratively. DIYers do what they do with help from online communities. I call it the return of the real world, where virtual communities don't replace the real world, they support it. Expect to see more of this hybrid real-virtual world and more trends on the next episode of Spark. All right, the wash cycle is done. I'm ready to see if my keyboard made it alive. I unfortunately did end up letting it go partially through the heat-dry cycle. I just couldn't get to it in time. Let's see what happened. If it's all in one piece, my keyboard is all right. It's in one piece at least. But does it work? You heard the voices of our guests,
Donna Bell,
Mark Fetterman,
Scott Michella,
Thomas Kreese, and from the Spark community, you heard
Steve from Montreal,
Rachel,
Sarah,
Chicken, Sophia, and Zuzu, and Jesse. The Spark team is Elizabeth Bowie, Dan Meisner, Tom Howell, and me, Nora Young. Spark was made with Creative Commons music. You can find the artists at our website, cbc.ca/spark. Please do visit us online or drop us an email at spark@cbc.ca.
Underneath the desk, and I've got that keyboard in, and we're just going to see what happens. That beeping doesn't sound very good. I think I did something I shouldn't have.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.